support us by supporting our sponsors. Go to our website, accnation.net, and visit Fanatics, Reebok, Built Bar, SportsMemorabilia.com, and ShareASale.com. Welcome to ACC Nation. Football, basketball, and lots of sports news coming up in this episode. We're joined by old friend Chris Bond. Xavion has a hot take on the Notre Dame-USC game from the perspective of a Trojans fan. And ACC men's basketball coaches speak to us from the conference's Operation Basketball. But first, will Pittsburgh, Florida State, and Louisville hold on to their top 25 college volleyball spots this week? We'll find out. Pitt leads the way at number 3. In cross country, the NC State men's and women's team lead the way for the conference. Both squads are in the top 10. North Carolina has the nation's top spot in field hockey this week. Virginia owns the top spot in both men's and women's soccer. In ice hockey, on the men's side, Boston College at number 6, Notre Dame comes in at number 7. On the women's side, it's Boston College at number 7, Syracuse showing up in the receiving votes category. Swimming and diving preseason top 25, NC State leads the way with the men at number 3. Virginia leads the conference women at number 2. In golf, Georgia Tech men are at number 1 and Wake Forest women are ranked number 5. Jumping feet first into football now, the top 5 on the AP side, Alabama, LSU, Clemson, Ohio State, and Oklahoma. Clemson is the only ACC team in the top 25. Notre Dame comes in at number 8. Let's take a look at upsets in college football. South Carolina just really upset the apple cart in the SEC with a 2-overtime win over Georgia, 2017. Final score there. Number 3, Georgia tumbles in the AP and USA Today polls. You guys have any thoughts on this other than just elation?
Well, I see that South Carolina took advantage of a sleeping Giants. Georgia's been sleepwalking through its schedule. Talk about a school that signed, according to Rivals.com, 15 five-star athletes. They've lapped the field as far as talent. They haven't really been pushed or tested outside of the Notre Dame game. And so they've just been kind of sleepwalking through. Well, South Carolina caught them napping and they're awake now, but it may be too late because there's a lot of contenders this year for the playoffs as opposed to years past. And that one loss, it could be critical.
Well, pal, that's what happens in the SEC. Everybody can beat everybody on a given week. It's so tough out there, pal.
And that's exactly what we saw on Twitter, too.
Yep. But hey, I mean, what does it really say, though, when the team that beat the number 3 team in the country also lost to North Carolina?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yes, indeed. There you go, SEC fans. All right, our next loss was number 23, Memphis, got toppled by Temple, 30-28. Really? Okay, so what? All right, our next two games, and we're going to talk about these in just a minute, are ACC games. And this, quite frankly, one of them was an entertaining game if you like offense. If you like defense, you are SOL, okay? The rest of this was just horrible. You can say whatever you want about these games. We'll get into them here in just a minute, but out of all the upsets, it was 50% of the upsets in the AP Top 25, ACC. Does not bode well. Let's get into ACC games. Thursday, it was NC State over Syracuse, 16-10. Now, here's the thing. Syracuse started out as a preseason favorite. And basically, just as Will has been saying all season, no, they're not all that. And boy, they just continue to prove that point.
Yep, and it really breaks down to the offense just hasn't been as crisp this year as it has been in years past. And I was warning everybody about Tommy DeVito. You know, I had not seen enough out of him to say he was going to be a great heir apparent to Eric Dungy. You know, he was barely a 50% completion passer coming in. He's done all right this year. I mean, he threw for 300 yards in this game, but one touchdown, but 300 yards and you still only scored 10 points. The running game was not there. The 1.1 yards per carry. I think this was all about NC State's defense. 8 sacks, 11 tackles for loss. The Wolfpack's offense has its own questions on offense right now. Quarterback situation is kind of going all over the place with it now. Played Bailey Hockman most of the game. Devin Leary came in and, you know, had some time, but they're 4-2, to be honest, with these last 3 weeks or so have not been very pretty.
Very ugly. Chris, you have any thoughts on that particular game and the performances or lack thereof?
Well, I don't care what kind of offense you run, and especially Syracuse's offense that's so predicated through the air. If you can't protect quarterback, then you're dead in the water. And 8 sacks, as Will just mentioned there, is a lot to take from anybody. You have to wonder if DeVito is still in the ice bath right now, because, man, he took a beating Thursday night. And especially Trell Murchison getting that last critical sack in the closing seconds to protect the lead. And I've felt NC State is not a very good football team. And that's certainly not a defensive line that makes you remember Bradley Chubb. So they're definitely a program transition. And when they're able to get that kind of pressure through your line to your quarterback, you've got problems. This just tells me that Eric Dungy did for Syracuse what basically Lamar Jackson did in years past for Louisville. Covered up a lot of problems, and now those things are exposed. You have to wonder, without a defense that can't that has trouble stopping other air games, is Syracuse even going to survive to a bowl game at this point?
Good comparison, Dungy to Lamar Jackson, and how things are being exposed. We have another exposure here. Man, Friday night, Will has been going on and on about Robert Anae for some time. And I know that, Chris, you're going to have another viewpoint on this from the standpoint of looking at Miami. It's going to be interesting to hear both sides of this game. Quite frankly, I wasn't impressed by either side. It was just a horrible game. It was some really bad calls by the coaches. And I just really left that game scratching my head, wondering, what's the future for these two programs? And I know that sounds kind of extreme, but Will, go ahead. You're on the losing side of this game. Let's find out what your thoughts are.
Yeah, if anybody knows me knows I am not necessarily a big Robert and I fan, and I feel like I won't put this loss completely on him. There were some play calls that were really bad in this game. But at the same time, you got to look at the execution on offense, too. You had 6 trips into the red zone and came away with just 9 points. That is not nice, everybody. And you only lose the game by 8 points. It really says something. The biggest problem with Virginia right now is they cannot get the run game going. Blaine Talapapa and Bryce Perkins led with 27 yards apiece. They were talking, Bronco Mendenhall, in the week leading up, that they were going to get Mike Hollins more involved in the offense. 2 carries. I guess technically that is more than what he's been involved.
Yeah, just a bit.
And one of those, he did fumble on one of those, which was unfortunate, which, led into one of those times in the red zone. They came away empty. But this offense is very rudderless, and they need to figure things out. However, I will mention that Virginia just played the 2 best defenses they're going to face the rest of the season. I don't think they play another defense that's currently in the top 40 in terms of total yards allowed the rest of the season. So it should be a little bit easier. But I mean, if you're a Virginia fan right now, do you really have the confidence in this offense to lead you to winning the Coastal? The defense is there. Like, this defense is awesome. Noah Taylor, he had an awesome game. He's a star in the making for this team. I'm really excited to see what this defense is going to be doing. But if this team does not win the Coastal, it'll be because of the offense.
All right, Chris, your thoughts on a little bit on Virginia, but give us a perspective of Miami since you're down in the Florida area.
Nicosi Perry is the answer to their prayers, which I digress. I do not agree.
Yeah.
No,
he was responsible for 2 touchdowns Thursday night, and he provided some spark to the offense, but Miami's got a lot more problems than Nicosi Perry can cover up. This was clearly a win that Manny Diaz needed, because they were staring down the barrel going 2-4 with so much expectations coming in. Miami defense delivered, especially the linebackers, one of the best linebacking corps in the country. They've played well all year, and even when the rest of the team has floundered, it's not going to be the answer. And the coach Perry had a nice game. He's not going to you're going to need a little bit more of him when you got other teams down the road, like Florida State, who's starting to find their confidence in spite of what happened this past weekend. This is a game that Miami kind of fell into, in my opinion, because Virginia just, you know, every guy out there has got that one gal that got away. Well, every team out there has got that one game that got away. This will be the game Virginia will look back on this season that they floundered away, because Will and I were both looking at this game from last week, coming into it, that as much trouble as Miami has with their tackles, and as strong as they are on the edge, Virginia, stealing words from Will actually, was going to feast on sacks. Defense played really well, but when your most valuable player is your kicker on the stat line, Virginia's got a lot to fix on the offensive side of the ball. And if you're with hopes of winning their division, and you've got that will give you a date with Clemson by all odds, you've got a lot to clean up to even stay competitive when that end comes.
In the Coastal, the standings right now, Duke has it. They're in the lead. Virginia, then North Carolina. Then over in the Atlantic, it's Clemson, Louisville, Florida State. Surprises. We keep getting the apple cart turned upside down and sifted and shaken and stirred and anything else you can throw in there. Let's get on to our next game. This is one that, oh my gosh, was long. It was entertaining, awfully, but it was, from a defensive standpoint, certainly offensive. Louisville over Wake Forest, 62-59. You know, I don't know that you can say either team performed fabulously, maybe on offense, but defense was just horrible.
Well, there is no D in Louisville or Wake Forest, so I guess that's enough of a hint there. But, you know, this was a pretty competitive basketball game. I thought Danny Manning coached really well in this game to keep him, you know, within 3 points at home. Uh-huh. You know, excellent job by him. Oh, sorry.
Hey, he almost pulled out a win again.
I know. Three fell off at the buzzer that sent him to overtime. You know, they were almost there.
I keep emphasizing almost.
Almost. Yep. Stories of this game is both starting quarterbacks left with injuries at some point during this game. Mikael Cunningham left, did not return. Evan Conley stepped up, was really good in this game as a dual threat guy. Threw for 2 touchdowns, ran for 1, had over 250 total yards. Jamie Newman got hurt in this game. I believe he injured his shoulder. Sam Hartman came in, went 9-15 for 172 yards, 2 touchdowns. Wake went for 668 yards in a losing effort. Yeah, no defense in this game. I mean, Louisville went for over 500 in this game, 295 yards passing, 225 yards on the ground. And that's with Javion Hawkins averaging just 3 yards a carry. That tells you like how impressive Evan Conley was, you know, 79 yards. And some of that comes from just not having any tape on him. You know, you're really learning about him for the first time. At the same time, you know, if you're Wake Forest, you can't, you know, turn the ball over as much as you did and expect to win the ball game. Still, you know, impressive win for Louisville. And I feel like Scott Satterfield is pretty much locked up coach of the year already.
It seems like everybody on Twitter agrees with you, mostly everybody. Louisville, 62, Wake Forest, 59, that final score. Yeah, basketball. But we're talking a football game here that, I don't know, man. Your impressions, Chris, it's just, wow.
So anybody want to take a wager that when Louisville and Wake play in basketball this coming season, if they'll beat that combined score? Anybody, either one of you guys want to take a wager on that?
I would take the wager that Louisville will combined on one side will have that combined score. otherwise, no.
Well, a couple significant things to come out of this is this was the end of a 7-game winning streak for Wake Forest. This was their longest streak since 1944, that streak is now over in history. This is also the first victory of a ranked opponent for Louisville since Charlie Strong was coaching and Teddy Bridgewater. It's been a while. It's been a while for them. And Satterfield has been all talking about playing the long game, setting up for 3 or 4 years down the road. Well, the present looks pretty good. The present looks really good. It won't be so pleasant this coming Saturday because if you take a peek at that schedule, you got the defending champ on the road. But this was really nice. Obviously, you got a lot to clean up on the defensive side, but they knew that. They lacked size in the middle up front. And Wake will really challenge you with their pace. So they were never really out of it. Even when they were down 3 scores, I wasn't surprised they got it down to 1 score within just a few seconds. It was a very exciting game. Unless you were a fan of defense, then it was just putrid. Wake's got to dust itself off. They got Florida State coming in next weekend, who's refocusing after the drubbing they took down in Clemson. Satterfield, yeah, you got to love that hire, and it looks really good now.
As alluded to, Clemson travels to Louisville next week. That should be an entertaining game if Louisville can roll off scores like they did against Wake Forest, seemingly every 30 seconds or so. Clemson may have their hands full. That'd be a fun game to watch. Here's a game we won't talk very much about unless you guys really, really feel compelled. Duke 41, Georgia Tech 23. Duke pretty much put on the brakes after running the score up and let Jeff Collins exercise his offense a little bit in the second half. Anybody want to throw 2 cents in there on that game?
I still think Georgia Tech's offense is getting better and better by the week. I mean, it's still a long ways to go to resemble a competent offense, but there's baby steps there.
Yep.
Yeah, they're absolutely making progress. It's not big or significant because they have so far to go. Duke, I thought, got a bit sloppy in the second half, understandably, but you know, Coach Cutler will clean that up because they now are going to have a angry Virginia team coming in next week. And that is a game with a huge implication for that division because right now the winner of that is pretty much in the driver's seat for the ACC title game.
Should be interesting. Our next game, really, again, not a whole lot to talk about here. The Hokies continue to struggle. They did not get off to a good start against Rhode Island. They ended up winning 34-17. Chris, any thoughts about where the Hokies stand and how they performed in that game?
Well, you really don't learn anything out of a game or with an opponent of this caliber. It doesn't. All you're doing is trying to polish up your assignments, try to get there, and not open up too much of your playbook for opponents down the road. This was just a breather game for Virginia Tech. There was never really anything to worry about this.
Will?
Yeah, it was 24-17 starting the fourth quarter. Virginia Tech reeled off the final 10 points. But the things that you really are liking when you're coming out of this game, if you're a Virginia Tech fan, is Hendon Hooker, you know, looked solid again through 3 touchdown passes. And they actually had a running game for once. I mean, Deshaun McClees tied a career high with 124 yards rushing. They ran for 224 yards in this game. I didn't know they were even capable of doing that, to be honest with you.
Well, at least they got a win, okay? That's yep. A plus. And I know that the Boo Birds are out, and there's still some heat that's coming in the direction of the coaching staff. They're just not used to that. Hey, a couple of teams can say that this year, that they're just not used to that kind of play. And one of the teams that is not used to that kind of play is Florida State. Clemson, 45, Florida State, 14. Misleading in some ways. In Florida State, when we talk about a team that is getting better, you talked about Georgia Tech, Will, getting better progressively. We've seen Florida State doing the same thing. I don't know what that quite means, and I'm not sure how to gauge it. So we'll start with Will on this and go to Chris, because I know Chris, big Seminoles fan, got to have something to say about where the Noles are right now.
Yeah, you know what? It's still impressive. They've played so much better of late, the Seminoles had. That was just going to be a rough game. It's just so hard to win at Clemson, and you know, they Trevor Lawrence looked like started to look like the Trevor Lawrence of old, through 470 yards, three touchdowns. But, you know, they were up 28-0 at half. So, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of reason to play him beyond that. Yeah, like you say, for Florida State, you know, it was just kind of getting through the game. It was not a very good game, passing the ball between Hornibrook and Blackman. Did have a success running the football, though. Not so much Cam Akers, but for Kalen Laybourne, who actually ran the ball pretty well, had a 40-yard run. But, you know, Clemson, they needed a big win to kind of get the doubters off their back.
Well, you know what? I was going to say here that Taggart actually and the staff, I think, planned this very well. If they had come in with try to win and run at the high pace, a higher pace that they've been trying to run at, it would have given Clemson more possessions than they already have. And that's where your 70-7 blowouts happen. They also didn't mail it in either. The defense was competitive. They were still hitting, shooting their gaps all the way through the end of the game. They came in to progress, to work on things, to get better. They looked at Clemson as a measuring stick. Okay, this is how far we have to go. And the flip side of this, you know, you look at Clemson, you know, we alluded earlier about, or I did, about, you know, how South Carolina caught a giant sleeping. Well, when you catch a giant sleeping, you better follow through like South Carolina did, because North Carolina did that 2 weeks ago. And now the giant in the ACC is awake. And now Dabo Sweeney is now not waiting for them to be tested. He knows through looking at the national picture, he's got to have them ramped up and ready to play every game to their potential. Don't wait to get tested anymore, because he's right. He said in the week coming in, if you take a loss this year, defending champion or not, you may not get into the playoff. With Oklahoma, Ohio State, now LSU has found an offense out there, and Bama is still at number one right now. He has to look at the big picture. Every game now is the most important game. He was, in fact, asked that. You feel FSU is the most important game you schedule? He said yes, because it's the next one. Well, his next one now is Louisville, which would be a very interesting matchup, another school that is progressing and getting better. I have a feeling Scott Satterfield is going to be looking at that as just working on things and getting better and staying competitive, but no extending yourself to try to win this game, because right now Clemson is just on so much of a different level.
Notre Dame pulled off a close win over USC. With a hot take, here's Xavion.
Boom. 30-27 final score, and to be completely honest, this was a game that USC should not have only won, but should have definitely won by at least two scores. The way that game started off, Notre Dame was out of sync throughout. I mean, Ian Book, 17-32, 165 yards and a touchdown. That's not typical Ian Book numbers. He did do a fantastic job running out of the pocket and getting them extra yards here and there and getting that touchdown. This is not a game that USC should have lost at all to Notre Dame. That, like, not even remotely close. We missed early in the second or first half, first quarter, I think it was. Keaton Slovis missed Amon-Ra St. Brown on an easy post pattern play that we got in the second half, because clearly it was there in the first half by the missed touchdown. Our freshman running back, 10 for 82 yards, 8.2. Meanwhile, the other two people had 17 carries for 90 yards. Why are we giving the ball to two upperclassmen who aren't getting anything as much as a freshman? 240 pounds, running over people, carrying the pile. He had one run where he looked like he was down, and he got up. It took five Irish players plus an additional two USC players to get this kid down. But he only got the ball 10 times. Why? Please explain. Meanwhile, you know, if you look at the rushing, 35 rushing attempts to 48 for USC to 48 for Notre Dame. Notre Dame had 308 rushing yards to our 171. Does that sound like a recipe for victory for any type of Trojan fans? No. I'll even let people know on a secret. I didn't watch the second half of the game. You want to know why I didn't watch the second half of the game? Because I've seen this for the last four seasons under Clay Helton. I have finally reached my breaking point. I love Clay Helton as a person, as a man, as a role model, as a mentor, but as a head coach for this team, It's your time is done. I'm hoping and praying, and I know we're not going to see it because there's no AD, new president. We're not going to get that message, that Bleacher Report alert, that ESPN alert, that Clay Helton has been fired. We're not going to get that until the end of the season. But it needs to happen, and there's no more games. Clay Helton is the reason why we still have Clancy Pendergrass as our defensive coordinator. And I don't know if anybody else knows, remembers this. I know I remember this. During the offseason last year, we got a notification from Bleacher Report, from ESPN, saying that Clancy Pendergrass was fired. And I went and instantly tweeted, hallelujah, hooray, jumping for joy. Because Clancy Pendergrass is not a good defensive coordinator. I understand bringing pressure every play. I understand getting in the quarterback's face does well. But when you constantly give up large chunk plays, we have Tony Jones Jr., who the whole entire game until that 43-yard run he had was bottled up. Brandon Lindsey, a 51-yard run. Those are big chunk plays. A 26-yard pass play to Claypool for Notre Dame. Chunk plays. Those are three chunk plays that the defense gives up every single game. This isn't a one-off. This isn't a one-off game for the Trojans defense or the offense for that matter. This is this, what we've essentially been accustomed to being a Trojan fan for the last 4 years under Clay Helton. Consistently this every single week. Talent-wise, there's no way this team of Notre Dame stands on the same level as a talent that is on the field for USC every single game. I saw a chart, Brian Kelly 6-3 against USC. Now he's 7-3. That means for the last 10 games, which is essentially the last 10 years where we've had Clay Helton, we've had Steve Sarkisian, we've had Lane Kiffin. And there's one name I didn't bring up, and he's going to be my closing point in a second, the reason why I'm so angry and pissed off. But there's one name I didn't bring up because he's the only coach that I would think was responsible for at least one of those losses that Brian Kelly has had to USC in the last 10 years. What point are we going to get out of the shadow? Notre Dame is a respectable program. I understand it, and I get it. I do get it. But they do not belong on the field of USC at any given point. The talent is there. The ability is there. The execution just isn't there. And it starts up top. I am 100% on the bandwagon. We need to fire Clay Helton. I don't know how, who's going to do it, get it done. It has to get done. It's very disheartening to see. I'm watching College Game Day. It's LSU. It's Florida. I wonder if anybody out there knows where Ed Orgeron was before he fell into LSU's lap. I'll give you guys a second. Think, rack your brains. Oh, that's right. He was the interim coach at USC. He came back and turned around the season where we not only beat Notre Dame, we beat UCLA. And going into our bowl game that season, what does the athletic director do? Pat Hayden, the great infamous Pat Hayden, he chooses not to give Ed Orgeron the job. And based off for LSU against Florida, do you think it would have been probably beneficial to have that type of man leading a group of young men as opposed to what we ended up having with? We had Ed Orgeron here. And if you see what he does recruiting-wise in the South, the SEC country, you don't think he's bringing that to California? Beautiful sunny California. I understand country boys love their barbecue, their cornbread, and their mama and whatnot. But they come out here to L.A., they're going to forget about their mama real quick when they go to the beach and whatnot. They'll forget about all that real quick. But meanwhile, we have faith, family, and football. Clay Helton fight on. This was a great game. If my team continues to play like this against Notre Dame for the rest of the season, we can win the Pac-12 South. I'm telling you right now, USC is not about winning the Pac-12 South. It's about championships or bust. Nobody cares about winning the Pac-12 South. That means nothing. Congratulations when we had a period of time where we had recruiting violations. We couldn't even make it to the postseason. We had postseason bans. Yeah, that first time you did win the Pac-12 South because we hadn't had it for such a long period. After having over a decade of dominance, yes, we are so fantastic to get that back. But you got that in your first year. Thanks. And I'm not only going to give it to Sam Darnold, but that team with Juju Smith, with Adoree Jackson, who are now playing Sundays, who are legitimate contributors and star players in the NFL, and Sam Darnold, you did what you probably should have done. You should have done more, in all honesty, because there's no reason why Sam Darnold shouldn't have started those first three games. But that's another subject and for another time later. I can't stomach watching this team and seeing how the games are turning out. It's the same thing over and over and over again. We either choose to start passing when the run is obviously there, and we go away from the run to control the clock, or we start running when they load the box. Throughout the whole entire broadcast, I kept hearing them saying they only got a three-man front. This is unusual for Notre Dame to only have a three-man front. It's unusual for them to do this. That means they're telling you to run. If they have three men and I have five offensive linemen, that means I have two extra blockers that can get to the second level and create even more lanes for my dynamic running backs. But yet we only ran the ball 35 times. We threw the ball 35 times, which is always something that Clay Helton is so happy about. We're balanced. We pass and run just as much. Well, that's why our record is super balanced right now. That's why we're 3-3. And all of our losses have been away games. How can you be confident in your coach, his staff, if you guys leave home and you can't compete? We've seen that three times this season. It's so disheartening, because I'm telling you from the bottom of my heart, as a USC fan, I have tried so hard to be supportive, to be glasses half full, half empty. It's enough is enough. I can't do it no more. I'm not going to say I'm not going to watch the rest of the games this season, but it's very close to that point, and we're only six games into, like, we're halfway into the season. I can't do this anymore. I can't deal. I guess I can give congrats to Notre Dame for winning another easy game because of Clay Helton and his inability to coach efficiently, make changes and make adjustments. And I'm done. I need a break, and that's that.
Now let's take a look at basketball. ACC Operation Basketball delivers the media's preseason top 15, preseason player of the year, and rookie of the year, and we'll get into that in just a moment. But first, let's hear from what we can expect from the top five teams in that poll from their coaches. Up first, it's Coach K on consistency and tempo.
We think we have a chance to be a good defensive team, and defense hopefully can force a tempo and force some turnovers, which give you a numerical advantage. So that adds to offense. We'll play a fast style of play.
Roy Williams, always a proponent of an up-tempo game, hasn't changed his tune. There will be an emphasis on pace and shooting this season.
For us, we do like to play at a fast pace. I've never had a team play at the pace as fast as I want them to. This year's team, one thing that I've emphasized to them so far is that last year could have been our best three-point shooting team ever with Cam and Luke and Kenny, Kobe. You've got to emphasize it every day so we can see if we can get the game at our pace as opposed to somebody else's pace.
Tony Bennett on building the program at Virginia.
I think we've been successful at Virginia because guys have grown and they've gotten into their upperclassmen years. And now we rely on the upperclassmen that are in our program. But there is a lot being lost. You can't deny how good Dre and Ty and Kyle were, and Jack Salt. I mean, he was significant. So, you know, rebuilding, starting a new cycle. However, the beauty of college basketball is you can be good with inexperienced guys and enough experience, and that's the challenge before us. But that brings some new excitement, and it means that those three guys that left early had phenomenal careers. And I think we'd all take, hey, you can win a national championship and lose those three guys. Will you take that and maybe be newer and have to start over in some ways? I think we'd all agree and take that, and that's where we're at right now.
Chris Mack can't emphasize finishing enough.
You know, I've talked to our team a lot about the word finishing, being able to finish a practice, finish a drill, finish a game, finish a season, which, you know, I know may seem like a far-reaching or a broader way to look at things. That, to me, I don't want to say is our biggest issue, but something that we talk about every single day.
And finally, Leonard Hamilton.
Well, it appears that we've developed some consistency over the years. I think we've developed a culture that our players have bought into. We've been able to recruit to who we are. Early on, I thought we adjusted our system to the talent that we had available. I think now what we're doing, we're recruiting the kind of players that fit the system. So we always have goals that we can achieve, a great team that we can compete against, and that just motivates us to work a little harder to try to continue keeping moving our program forward. We expect to have a good year now. We think that we have a good basketball team, and we're looking forward to the opportunity to go in and show who we are.
All right, we just heard from Duke's Coach K, UNC's Roy Williams, Virginia's Tony Bennett, Chris Mack of Louisville, and Leonard Hamilton of Florida State about what's going on in their programs. Some quick sound bites to introduce us to this section. We're going to take a look at Operation Basketball and how the media looks at all the teams in the ACC and how they're ranking them. And right now, of course, we've got those top five: Duke, UNC, Virginia, Louisville, and Florida State. Of course, that's not exactly how they all laid out. It starts this way. Duke is picked at number one. Anybody surprised by that? And we'll get into that in just a moment. North Carolina, 2. Louisville, 3. Virginia, 4. Florida State, 5. In first place votes, it's Duke with 51, Louisville, 29, North Carolina, 19, Virginia, 12. So that tells us a little bit about what's going on there. It's a surprise, quite frankly, that, again, we have really nothing to go on, really. To say that Duke is going to be number one, I think that that's sort of a misleading vote. We have seen that in the past, and it didn't always end up that way at the end of the year. The player of the year preseason, Jordan Nwora of Louisville, and the preseason ACC freshman of the year, Cole Anthony of North Carolina. The preseason all-ACC team, the first team, is Nwora of Louisville, Trey Jones, Duke, Cole Anthony, North Carolina, John Mooney, Notre Dame, and Mamadé Diakite of Virginia. So, guys, Duke at number one. Is that righteous?
It's pretty much what you expect out of the ACC media when they vote for basketball. I don't know how many years in a row it's been. I want to say it's been since like 2012, since Duke has not been picked to win the conference, and they haven't won in quite a few years, actually. Mm-hmm. I'm still on Louisville. I think Louisville will be my team that when I eventually release my rankings, they will be my team to win the ACC this year. I would just move Duke and Carolina down a spot. I think it would be Louisville, Duke, Carolina, Virginia. And then really the top seven or eight or so. There's really the top four, and then five through seven, really. I think there's another tier: Florida State, NC State, Notre Dame, of teams that are going to be good and, you know, can win on most nights. But then after that, I think, you know, Syracuse will be right there. I think they have a shot of making the tournament this year. But after that, there's going to be a whole lot of mediocrity down below that, which is unfortunate because I like Chris Likes at Miami, but I just don't think they have a whole lot around them this year.
So Duke picked for the fourth straight season, sixth time in 7 years, just to answer that question that you...
That's what it was.
Yeah,
well, it's like a list of usual suspects again. You almost feel like some of these media members just have that in their back pocket. When it comes back around, they just turn it in the same slip every year. It kind of feels that way, but I'm with Will. Louisville is a team that you shouldn't sleep on. I think that they're going to really come on center stage this year. And when the conference schedule rolls around, I think even before then, people will be looking at them coming in with so much momentum that, I'd like Duke's roster in North Carolina's, and you know, you talk about Roy Williams looking to run at a faster pace than he is already. kind of like the anti-Tony Bennett, really, in that sense. But, you know, North Carolina and Duke will be up there. They always are. But the ACC isn't about those two guys anymore. It isn't. This isn't our fathers or the ACCs of our childhood. This is a league that's in flux. And so much can change from month to month and year to year that, I mean, it just wasn't that long ago there was a scandal at Louisville. It wasn't that long ago. Now they're looking at winning the conference. We're talking about them, and for the right reasons. Back-to-ball season can't come here soon enough. I'm looking forward to see what they can do. The 5-7 group that Will was alluding to, I can see NC State really challenging someone in that upper group. I see them as a strong dark horse. And I think keep an eye on them because they're going to win some surprise games on the road. And we'll see how that pans out.
Just to take a look at that mid-group, number six, it's NC State, then Notre Dame at number seven. This has been a question mark, I think, for Will. I've been a little bit more up on Notre Dame because I believe that they have more coming back into play. Syracuse at number eight, Miami at number nine, Pitt at number 10. And I think Pitt is also a team that we need to keep an eye on this season, because I think there has been enough culture change, scheme change. Might not have all the personnel in place just yet, but that is a team to keep an eye on, I think, as well. You guys have any thoughts? And we'll start with Will on that mid-pack, NC State, Notre Dame, Syracuse, Miami, and Pitt.
So, I'm giving Notre Dame a benefit of the doubt because I am a Mike Bray fan, but I think I even said this on last week's podcast that this was one of the worst shooting teams in the country last year. And, you know, how much can that really improve from one season to the next? I mean, you expect it to improve some just because everyone's a year older and more, and you would think better. That's where I think they have a shot to be right around that seven range. And, you know, probably an NCAA tournament team. But I still think they're a ways behind, you know, the top four. Syracuse I'm interested in because there is a lot of different, you know, pieces around that program this year. Tyus Battle's gone. O'Shea Brissett's gone. You know, they're bringing back, you know, some different players. You know, they're now a little older. I think they're going to be a little bit deeper this year, actually. I think Syracuse is the team that will flirt with the NCAA tournament once again.
Chris, you had mentioned NC State as being a team probably flying under the radar. I would agree with you there. Your thoughts on NC State, Notre Dame, Syracuse, Miami, Pitt, those teams that are in that mid-pack range?
Well, Notre Dame is not a team you would ever thought would dry up from shooters, because that's what Mike Bray's been living on his regime. Is he almost felt like he had a shooter's tree in his backyard. Whenever one would graduate, he'd go in the backyard and pick up another one. That tree seemed to have dried up now, and you wonder what he's going to do, because shooters, if you have a team that's lacking good shooting, it doesn't get better unless you get an influx of players that are good shooters. You can teach defense. You can teach motion offenses. But shooting is something that comes from years and years of repetition and just talent. That's the real talent of basketball is natural shooters. The Larry Birds of the past that we grew up with, they were born just to put the basketball from range. I don't see that changing. There's not a lot coming in on the roster that makes you think Mike Bray's going to reignite that. I agree with Will. Syracuse is a team actually could be another one that flies under the radar. And I think they'll get in the tournament, not just by reputation. I think they'll squeak in there just because they're going to win just enough games. And they have a nice bench. So they're going to stay with a lot of people later in games. Miami's got a lot of work to do as far as building other pieces and one great player to carry them on offense. It's not going to be enough in this league. You're just going to, it may be another year or two before they get at some help in that roster to build that offense. With just enough offense in that roster, I think that's going to keep them competitive. And they may actually drop into the bottom third of the league.
Well, let's talk about that bottom third. It's Clemson, Georgia Tech, Boston College, Virginia Tech, Wake Forest. To be honest, guys, I that's where they belong. Things don't look all that rosy for any of these teams going into the season, and we kind of joked a little bit about Danny Manning, but honestly, this is his last season, man. If he's being picked at number 15, and I don't see him climbing out of that cellar, no matter what he does.
Yeah, see, the only team I think that could flirt with him in the cellar is Boston College. This is going to be a rough season for them this year. You have to figure Yuki Bowman's now gone. Mm-hmm. You think Winston Tabbs out for the season was going to be a player they were going to depend on a lot. So there's just a lot of unknown there at Boston College. And Georgia Tech, I thought they have some good pieces, but I thought they would be a little bit higher up in the order. But at the same time, this team is they've got what's going on there with the sanctions, but they did appeal, and we're going to wait to see how that all plays out. So maybe there's a chance they get into the postseason this year. Clemson, I think, is too high. I'm just not seeing anything about that I like about them either. I don't think it's going to be a very good team.
I would say the two Techs are the two teams in my eyes out of that group that you need to keep an eye on.
I do like Virginia Tech, actually. I think they're going to be – I think they'll finish a couple spots higher than this. I think this team is going to surprise some people. That they've got some surprise, some good young talent. Mike Young has built a strong program there, and it's kind of like a perfect storm because – Buzz Williams, he brought so much success to that program. Plus, with all the players gone, you have the opportunity to sell playing time to these four-star kids, and that's what they want. They want to be able to come in and play right away, and he's going to be able to deliver on that promise. So I actually think in the short term, Virginia Tech is going to be really good. It just might take a couple of years.
Yeah. Chris, Clemson, Georgia Tech, Boston College, Virginia Tech, and Wake Forest.
Oh, Virginia Tech was the one I was going to be ready to talk about. And, there is no buzz in Blacksburg right now, but there is Mike Young. And I agree with Will. He's selling the playing time, and he's a good recruiter. Basketball, much or more so than football, you can make an immediate impact with first-year players. I think they're going to be fun to watch, and that's something that their team to keep an eye on. And Mike Young is invested because he grew up going to Virginia Tech basketball games. And how can you? I think we're well past questioning any hires by the AD Whip Badcock as far as most of the programs go at Virginia Tech. Just the finest AD in the league, and this is a great hire, and I think it's a great follow up to Buzz Williams.
Subscribe to ACC Nation Podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Blueberry, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, and Deezer. And listen to ACC Nation Radio 24/7. Simply click on our links page at accnation.net or on the main page, go to radio. Connect with us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube at ACC Nation. For a shout out, drop us a line. Email us at contact@accnation.net. For Will Ogenin, Xavion, and Chris Bond, I'm Jim Quist. Until next time, cheers.